Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the fourth week's Truth of Happiness course Dhamma study on the first two factors of the Eightfold Path, right view and right intention. As there were four new Sangha members at this Saturday's class, a brief synopsis of the first 3 weeks is included in this talk. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on Saturday, December 26, 2015.
Well, the meditation practice that I teach and that we use here in our Sangha is called Shamatha Vipassana meditation. And I teach that within a broader framework, and that broader framework is known as the Eightfold Path. So what I'm teaching is the basic teachings of the Buddha. And the basic teachings... Good morning, Andrew! The basic teachings of the Buddha are just that. They're very basic. Over the years, over the 2,500 plus years since his death, a lot of additions and accommodations have been made to those original teachings, and sometimes they're helpful and sometimes they're not. But what we do here is develop understanding of who we are in relation to the world that we live in, and we develop an understanding of the cause and the cessation of the word that's often used is dukkha, but it really a good translation of that word is just simply stress. And so stress can mean anything from a general unsatisfactoriness in life to extreme emotional and physical suffering, but it fits all of those. The meditation method itself, shamatha means to quiet the mind or to develop a tranquil mind, and vipassana means to gain insight. And it's a very specific type of insight. It's not anything analytical about discrete events in our lives. It's insight into what are called the three marks of existence. And those three marks of existence are anicca or impermanence, anatta or the not-self characteristic, and dukkha. And we develop an understanding of the interrelationship of these three characteristics. And I know I'm getting into something that you're, you know, it's probably like, what? What's he talking about? But it's just to be aware that that's where we're going with this. The meditation method, good morning, Jen. The meditation method itself is very simple. It's primarily, we meditate within this broader framework, primarily to develop concentration. It's not to have any type of mystical or esoteric experience. It's not even to relax, although a good meditation practice will help you relax. We develop concentration for a very specific reason, so that we can be well concentrated enough to notice those three marks of existence and our interaction with them. And to notice, I'll talk a little bit more about the Four Noble Truths. So that's enough of this preliminary speech today, because I want to get into the course. But just remember that everything that that the Buddha taught for 45 years was in the context of the Four Noble Truths, and the Eightfold Path was a path that he taught to develop understanding of those Four Noble Truths. There's nothing that he taught that's out of that context. He taught how to understand the nature of suffering and the cause of our own craving and clinging that creates that. And then he also, along the way, we get to understand what makes up the self. So, welcome. Kelly and Donica and Darwin are new to us today, and there's someone else is coming?
Hopefully Marina is coming.
Marina? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I will start the class.
Sounds good.
So this is the fourth week of the 10-week Truth of Happiness course. The same class that I teach on Tuesdays is repeated on Saturday. So I taught right view and right intention on Tuesday's class. But those that come to both classes say the teachings are often different on Saturday. So to me they're the same. But and we started with Shamatha Vipassana meditation. And as we're going through this 10 weeks, we're developing that integration within this wider framework that the Buddha taught. And we're covering a few other supportive topics. In week 7, we'll get into the three marks of existence, anicca, anatta, and dukkha. And week 8 is dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates. And they're taught, or I'm teaching them in this sequence, which is also very similar to how the Buddha presented it originally, so that we understand the broader context of our meditation practice. Again, it's not just sitting on our cushions. There's much more to it. There's even some Buddhist practices that are presented as just sitting, and that's fine. I have no argument with that school. But there's so much more of a necessary framework. If all we're doing is sitting, we tend to just reinforce our own confused, conditioned thinking. And there's no broader context to recognize that and to start developing an understanding of the first noble truth and the cause of that suffering. So the second week was the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which is a very simple direct teaching on how to be mindful of things that are occurring and the process that's occurring in this moment. Hello, Marina.
This is Marina.
Welcome to our Sangha. I'm John. It's a pleasure to meet you. And not to repeat everything I just said, but we're in the middle of a 10-week course. It's perfectly appropriate that you're here for today. But I teach meditation here within a broader framework, and that's what this course is about. And so this week we're on right view and right intention. Following Shamatha Vipassana meditation and the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, the week before we were looking at the Four Noble Truths. And just to establish that, the Four Noble Truths is that there is dukkha, there is a general unsatisfactoriness to life. The cause of that, the cause of dukkha, the first noble truth, is craving and clinging, which arises from a lack of understanding of what constitutes a self. The third noble truth, and it's probably the most important, is that cessation of the first noble truth, cessation of dukkha, is possible. And the fourth noble truth is the truth of the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. And so the Buddha presented the four noble truths first in his very first teaching, called the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And then he explained it as in that way, explaining what it is, and then that these four truths are tasked to accomplish. In other words, the whole point of the Dhamma is to develop a profound understanding of dukkha, of the general unsatisfactoriness of life, and to release all that craving and clinging that originates that. And that whole process is about recognizing where we're craving and clinging and where we're seeking to continue to establish what the Buddha said was anatta. And it's another word that's misunderstood in the Dhamma. Anatta means not self. And the Buddha used it not to not to create some mystical understanding of ourselves or that we're just part of one great gigantic void because there's nothing here. What he's teaching with the word anatta is simply this. What you think of yourself is not it. It's not a self. That's what an anatta means. And the whole rest of the Dhamma is to recognize these false ideas that we have, these wrong views, and develop a right view of what we are in relation to these three marks of existence. Any questions or comments about that? I say a lot in that, you know, and I don't expect that you'll completely understand it. Again, that's what this whole process is about. So right view is initially the view that my views are wrong views. I don't really understand this. And when we first come across the Four Noble Truths, we might have a glimmer of understanding that, well, this kind of makes sense, and I'm going to point my mind into developing an understanding. From that point, from the point of acceptance that I may not know everything, and there may be something that I don't know that's useful here, that's the beginning of awakening. It's the beginning of inclining your mind, and this is the whole point of mindfulness, of the refined mindfulness that's developed in the Dhamma. Pointing your mind away from the confusion and distraction of ordinary life, and pointing that mind towards awakening and developing the ideas and the principles that will support that awakening. So the Buddha was never he never portrayed himself as a god, as someone to be worshipped. He consistently portrayed himself as simply a human being who, through his own efforts, awakened. And awakening, a better word that I use for awakening, is a fully mature human being. We understand who we are in relationship to the world, and we maintain that mindfulness. So these are practices that are very they're very practical practices. They apply to our daily life. It's not about something that's going to happen in another life. It's not about having a mystical experience. It's not about escaping our life. It's about being fully integrated into our lives moment by moment as our life occurs. So let me read a little bit about right view and right intention, then I'll talk a little more about it. And remember that everything the Buddha taught was in relationship and in the context of the Four Noble Truths. These are the Buddha's words. When the mind is inclined towards the Dhamma, the disciple of the noble ones gains a sense of the goal, gains a sense of the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. In one who is joyful, rapture arises. In one who is rapturous, the body grows calm. One whose body is calmed experiences ease. In one at ease, the mind becomes concentrated. So we're in a very practical way, we're just developing within ourselves a sense of well-being. And it's that deep, profound sense of well-being that grows from wisdom that enables us to live our lives moment by moment as life occurs. We're no longer distracted by seeking after sensory pleasures or avoiding things that might bring disappointment. We're in complete acceptance of what is occurring as it occurs. And one of the things that I talk a lot about, I won't so much today, is we learn the difference between approval and acceptance. And that's a significant understanding in the Dhamma. We can have an experience in life that we don't approve of, but we accept it simply because that's what's occurring. Right view initially is being mindful of the Four Noble Truths, beginning with the truth of stress. Clinging, craving, desire, and aversion all cause unhappiness and stress. Right view then brings to mind the possibility of the cessation of stress. Understanding the cause of the distraction of stress and the possibility to end stress, right view develops mindfulness of the path leading to the cessation of stress. Is that clear what I'm saying here about what right view is? And this is what I'm talking about now is initial or mundane right view. As we develop fully through this path, right view then encompasses every aspect of the path, and we maintain right view in every situation. Another way of describing that is a mind of equanimity, a mind that is always at peace with what occurs because we see things clearly. So even situations or events that might have greatly upset us in the past, we simply see that as part of a process of living in the world, and we no longer need that to be any different. Why is that, and how is that possible? Because we removed attachments of an ego personality from the people and events of our lives. And we simply see things as they occur. When people first hear that, the normal reaction is, well, what happens to me? What happens to this thing called me? Well, you shed it. You let it go. Remember, what the Buddha said that we normally conceive as ourselves is anatta. It's not a self. It's not worth defending. It's not worth maintaining. Recognize how that process has unfolded. And this begins with dependent origination, and let it go. So another way of looking at awakening is recognizing all of our attachments and all the ways that we've used to establish and maintain an ego personality and let everyone go. Let every one of them go. When the Buddha described an awakened human being, he used one of two words, released or unbound, as released or unbound from clinging. When he taught emptiness, he taught to empty the world of yourself and empty yourself of clinging. He didn't teach emptiness as some grand void. He taught it in a very useful way. Empty yourself of clinging. Hold on to nothing. And be willing to look at everything. Be willing to look at every one of our attachments. That's where concentration comes in. As we deepen our concentration, we start recognizing, for the first time in our lives usually, where we're attached, what we're clinging to, what concepts we have developed about ourselves to maintain ourselves in the world. And that leads to right intention. So if the cause of the unsatisfactory nature of life is craving and clinging, then right intention is the intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging. And that's exactly how it's presented in the Dhamma. It's a very simple and direct directive. But all of the Dhamma is related to that, to recognizing craving and clinging and abandon it. Look at where we're continuing to establish ourselves in an environment that can only prove in the end to be unsatisfactory and a distraction from our present life. And the rest of the path, the rest of the Eightfold Path, supports developing this understanding of right view and recognizing right intention. Next week we're going to talk about the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And these are moral and ethical ways of looking at our lives, but not in the way to judge ourselves harshly if we're acting in wrong speech or wrong action and wrong livelihood. It's more so to recognize that, recognizing that we're acting in that way, understanding where this comes from, attachment to an ego personality and the need to defend it constantly, and to move back into right speech, right action, and right livelihood. In that process, we're recognizing and abandoning clinging. That's the real value in those three factors of the Eightfold Path. And many people, when they first take to the Dhamma, recognize their clinging through right speech. So what comes out of our mouth is a perfect example of the state of the present state of our mindfulness, what comes out of our mouth. And as a part of right speech is what we tell ourselves. In fact, probably the most important aspect of right speech is that conversation we always have going on in our minds. And as we deepen our understanding, we realize how in our thinking we continue to reinforce anatta, that what the Buddha said is not a self. Is that clear? No questions?
Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.